Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Tim O'Shea. You're listening to the Doctor Within podcast.
The biggest secret of all, it's not a serious disease. Pop media's greatest fear is that people will suddenly realize the most basic, simple fact about this disease we're all talking about, that it's not that serious. Almost everyone recovers in a week or so, just like the flu. By sensationalizing the fatalities every day, coronavirus is continually portrayed as a death sentence, like it's bubonic plague or something from the 14th century. As we showed in podcast 703, there's no evidence that all these COVID patients have anything other than the seasonal flu. Think about it. The symptoms are exactly the same. The only thing that distinguishes it as novel is the presumptive evidence of an internationally discredited test procedure, your note number 3, which we're going to talk about. It's just the flu. Thinking outside the box of contemporary media for a moment, let's float the hypothesis that all these people simply have this year's seasonal flu. Let's say it's just the flu. Okay, so what would that look like? First of all, we have to remember that influenza has been number 10 of the top 10 causes of death in the U.S. for the past 25 years. The incidence is always highest among the elderly, the hospitalized, and the immune suppressed. If you're in the hospital with terminal diabetes, lung disease, and lupus, let's say, and at the very end, you happen to catch the flu in the hospital and you die, the cause of death is listed as influenza. So today, they're trying to claim that there are some 35,000 coronavirus cases in the U.S. and it's going up and up. Even if that number were right, which it certainly is not, how would that compare with the incidence of influenza in a normal flu season? Okay, so let's look at the real statistics here. The incidence of flu in the United States for the past 3 years. From CDC's own website, Your Note Number 2, on a page called Estimated Influenza Illnesses and Deaths in the United States, here are the numbers for the last 3 seasons. 2018, 2019, there were 35 million cases of flu, and 34,000 of them died. The year before that, 2017-2018, there were 45 million cases of flu with 61,000 deaths. The year before that, 2016-17, there were 29 million cases of flu with 38,000 deaths. That's your note number 2. So what is 35,000 cases compared with last year's 35 million cases? How easy was it to pretend that this novel virus exists and is spreading in the absence of any verifiable scientific testing, which we're about to discuss? Okay, what about the death rate? Last year, out of 35 million cases of the flu, there were 34,000 deaths. That's a death rate of less than 1/1,000th of 1%. Is that a serious disease? So you might say, yeah, but what about all these people dying from coronavirus? Well, there's no real proof that this novel coronavirus epidemic exists, what with the sloppy testing, etc. Plus, the percent of patients that are getting better from this supposed coronavirus are about the same as those who recover from the flu every year, which is almost all of them. And don't forget, this is a disease with the exact same symptoms as the flu. So what are we really talking about here? How's all this going to end? Most likely the same way all the rest of the boutique epidemics ended, and just the way it is ending in China right now. One day, the pop narrative will simply change, abruptly. The bureaucrats will simply announce, yes, because of our efforts, we have saved our nation from annihilation, etc., and the numbers of the stricken are dropping now, and it seems to be under our control, ... And very soon after that, you won't be hearing about it anymore, and it will be just a faint memory, like it never happened, just like all the other boutique epidemics. But right up until that day, when they decide it's over, media will still be predicting the most dire of futures and impending doom, etc. Yet suddenly, it will be over, and we'll be allowed out of our cages. So, as we saw in podcast 703, what's going to be the worst long-term consequence of all this? It's not the economic devastation, the emotional stress and panic, all the time lost from work, the collapsed businesses and loss of jobs, the trauma to families. No, something much worse than all that. We have just been trained. For the first time in our history, or anyone's history, we have just been told to stay inside our homes for weeks on end, told what to do on our telephones, stay inside till we tell you to come out, and we obeyed without the slightest complaint. And the masters saw that, and now they know they can do it again anytime they want for any reason they come up with. Cell phones. For those of us who can remember the time before cell phones, look at the evolution. For the first decade or so, cell phones were this fabulous technological advance, a quantum leap in convenience, freedom, and communication. Then, after several years, they became more of a tool for real-time messaging and for business. Then, a few more years, and they also became instruments of amusement and silliness, which competed for the precious moments of our actual lives, and in many cases, replaced actual lives. Know anybody like that? Eventually, the cell phone became a necessity. Who can live without one today? This evolution was also gradual that most of us didn't notice it. So notice this. With their newfound ability to send out an alarm signal to every cell phone in the state at once, forcing us to read the message, and the ability to suddenly give orders for the entire population to self-incarcerate, cell phones have finally reached the abyss of de-evolution. We have now been shown, unequivocally, that among all their other uses, cell phones can be the instruments of our enslavement. Finally, let's talk about the numbers and how they're determined. When we left off in podcast 703, only 2 weeks ago, the nation had supposedly gone from 22 cases to 8,000 cases in 10 days or so. These days were up to 35,000 cases, depending on your source, which is double from just a few days ago. How can that be, with everything closed down and everybody under house arrest? Where are they getting these numbers? It's impossible for these skyrocketing numbers to be accurate. Even the true medieval epidemics like the Black Death or bubonic plague, spreading through European cities that had no sewers or clean water systems, no possible way could diseases spread this fast. There's only one possible explanation for the exponential increases in coronavirus cases that we're seeing reported in everyday news, and that is recategorization. Recategorization of cases of some other disease that is already present. And there's only one option there, seasonal influenza. We can count on an average of 30 or 40 million flu cases every year, completely irrespective of the coronavirus program. That's a very large pool we can draw from, recategorizing some of them as COVID. So, we must learn to expect the daily scoreboard to continue to shoot up for a while here as the results from all the new testing kits start to come in. Since pop media is not responsible for sourcing these wild estimates every day, they can say anything they want. What's their goal? Is it to sell newspapers, hits, and views, or tell the verifiable truth? Remember, it's only the numbers that are keeping this rich pageant afloat. Probably half the people see 35,000 cases in Yahoo News, and suddenly it's gospel. Yes, sir, there's 35,000 people in the U.S. with coronavirus. Yep, saw it on Yahoo. So let's do what no one else is doing. Let's take a close look at the numbers. How verifiable are these statistics? As we learned in 702 and 703, just 3 weeks ago, 29 February, there were only 22 confirmed cases in the whole country. Your note number one. This was announced on a show with more credibility than any previous newscast. There were the heads of NIH, HHS, Mike Pence, the president, the top of the organized medicine food chain, making that statement, 22 cases. Then, just 2 weeks later, came that fateful YouTube video of March 16th that we'll never forget, when the bureaucrats suddenly announced that the Bay Area is under lockdown because now the count is up to 8,000 nationwide. Remember? March 16th. Since then, the estimates have been growing exponentially day by day. How is that possible? What proof do we have? Okay, there are four main sources for the daily number of cases across all media. First off, much of the numbers come from diagnosis by symptoms only, either from in-office visits or telephone interviews. It's the usual flu symptoms plus high temperature. That's enough to get you on the trendy coronavirus list. See podcast 702 for details on how this is exactly what took place in China, California, and across the nation. And this practice of diagnosing by symptoms only continues today in many communities. Second, you can also get on the list with a blood test that shows antibodies, which may or may not be specific to any coronavirus, let alone the alleged COVID strain. Your note number six. As we explained before, in the past, identification of antibodies in the blood meant that the body was fighting off a disease, or else that it had already recovered. That's what immunity is, creating antibodies. But then, with the new marketing of flu vaccine for the past 15 years, the presence of antibodies now means that the patient is afflicted with a potentially fatal illness and heroic intervention is necessary. Natural immunity, what's that? Third, still another test for coronavirus is the mythical PCR test that we outlined in 702, the polymerase chain reaction test, medicine's gold standard for identifying disease for the past 40 years. The claim is that the PCR can identify the exact RNA sequence of a disease virus. They can print that sequence out, and then they can compare viral samples from patients with that master sequence, looking for a matchup. That's the pitch that everyone believes: doctors, hospitals, bureaucrats, the media. Great premise, great story. Unfortunately, it's science fiction. The real PCR test does nothing of the kind. PCR testing was richly disavowed by its own inventor, Nobel Prize winner Dr. Kary Mullis. He was always embarrassed and exasperated at the unsupported claims being made about his PCR by organized medicine for several decades, like it was some kind of magic box. These unproven claims have gotten more and more extreme up to the present day. So, getting back to our story here, once the scientists decided the disease from Wuhan was a novel entity of the coronavirus family, they had to decide which one of the 500 strains it was. And that led to months of acronym scrabble, which is still ongoing. Is it COVID or SARS-CoV-19 or coronavirus or COVID-19, etc.? So, throughout February into March, biosamples from patients were being sent to CDC, presumably for PCR testing to rule out COVID, right? So that's where all the numbers up until the February 29 press conference, that's where they were coming from. Your note number one. By February 22nd, CDC announced they had tested 2,021 people, and of these, 49 showed positive, but only 17 were confirmed positive by genetic sequencing testing. This reinforces the figure of the 22 cases in that press conference of 29 February, your note number one. So, how did we get up to the 35,000 cases we have now, less than a month later? Good question. Obviously, there are many contributors to those statistics. Number one, the practice of diagnosing by symptoms only continues. Some communities actually have drive-in windows for coronavirus screening. They just take their temperature and do a questionnaire. That's it. Number two, sputum samples continue to be sent into CDC, who figured out a way to increase their output. Whether or not they actually did the labor-intensive PCR testing for each patient sample is their best-kept secret. Nobody knows. Especially when they admitted that of the 2,021 samples they tested, only 17 of them were confirmed by genetic sequencing, your note number five, which is what PCR is supposed to do, right? Looks like the sequencing is not routine. This is the antithesis of transparency in science here. Now, there's one more method of testing, the new test kits. This is probably the worst news of all as far as the beleaguered American people are concerned. The test kits, source number 4 for the daily count of cases. After several failures, around March 9th, 2020, the CDC finally began to market its experimental test kits for the virus that presumably causes COVID-19. These test kits remain unapproved. CDC states very clearly, the kits are for research purposes only, not for diagnostic use. And CDC is making no claim for their reliability. Here's exactly what they say. Quote, these sequences are intended to be used for the purposes of virus surveillance and research. CDC cannot provide any warranty regarding their accuracy. Your note number 8. The kits were sent to an undisclosed number of hospitals across the nation around March 14th through 20th. Even though Alex Azar stated that 1 million of the kits had been sent out, no one knows exactly where they were sent. There's no list at either HHS or CDC. So we have no idea how many kits there are. Worse yet, on February 29, the FDA began allowing medical centers and hospitals to develop their own test kits, which were fast-tracked for automatic approval. What's the difference between fast-tracked for automatic approval and unapproved, right? Your note number 7. So these test kits are completely experimental. So this means that any hospital can now develop its own test completely unregulated. Any hospital can decide what constitutes a positive test, and these figures are included in the daily national totals. And these figures are included in the daily national totals. Your note number 7. Starting to get the idea how unverifiable and irresponsible are the daily numbers of supposed coronavirus cases? This is just the briefest glance at what's going on across the country. This may begin to explain the skyrocketing numbers we've seen in the past few weeks, their sources and reliability. For a more complete look at the scientific inadequacies of the PCR test itself, please look at David Crowe's excellent review, Your Note Number 3, as well as the discussion in Vaccination is Not Immunization, Your Note Number 4. So much for the delusions of COVID testing and the reliability of the daily scoreboard numerology we're all subject to. You'll hear the term confirmed cases now on all media instead of just cases. But as we've seen, they're anything but confirmed. What will be even less reliable are the ad hoc on-site tests soon to be distributed. These will be unapproved, experimental, even more unreliable than the test kits. Their claim to give an immediate positive or negative result is ludicrous. It's scientifically impossible. The latest magic box. At this point, seems like everything we're getting from media and the bureaucrats is inflammatory, painting the worst of all outcomes. There is no rational voice. This boutique epidemic should have been over by now. The uniformly negative opinions are worse even than their own inflated statistics would warrant. Whatever you hear, though, be assured it is going to end. The daily numbers are now being driven by the new test kits. They just got their new toys, so they'll have to use them for a while. Science or no science. Attached are my references for this podcast. If you choose to believe the version that you read in the daily news, well, that's fine. But where exactly are their references? Ask yourself one final question here. How confident were you in the reliability of the daily corporate news? How much of it did you usually believe? Why would that be any different now? So thank you for your kind attention. For more information, please visit thedoctorwithin.com. Thank you.